We're going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 5, text number 29. Chapter 5 is called Karma Yoga, Action, Krishna Consciousness. Bhoktaram Dukatapasam Sarvalokamaheshwaram Suridam Sarvabhutanam Gyatvamam Shantimrichati. Person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Purport. The conditioned souls within the clutches of illusory energy are all anxious to attain peace in the material world, but they do not know the formula for peace, which is explained in this part of the Bhagavad Gita. The greatest peace formula is simply this. Lord Krishna is the beneficiary on all human activities. Men should offer everything to the transcendental service of the Lord because he is the proprietor of all planets and the demigods thereon. No one is greater than he. He is greater than the greatest of the demigods, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. In the Vedas, Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6.7, the Supreme Lord is described as Tam Ishvaranam Paramam Maheshwaram. Under the spell of illusion, living entities are trying to be the lords of all they survey, but actually they are dominated by the material energy of the Lord. The Lord is the master of material nature, and the conditioned souls are under the stringent rules of material nature. Unless one understands these bare facts, it is not possible to achieve peace in the world, either individually or collectively. This is the sense of Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna is the supreme predominator, and all living entities, including the great demigods, are his subordinates. One can attain perfect peace only in complete Krishna consciousness. This is a long purport, and we don't have that much time, so I'm only going to read the first paragraph. I'll read the translation again. Person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wish of all living entities, gains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswatam Deve Gauravani Vircharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskyatyade. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness is actually quite simple, but sometimes difficult to understand. The first point in Bhagavad Gita Krishna makes is that we are different from the body that we're presently in. And he explains the way we can understand the difference between ourselves, that is the person within this body who's conscious of the body, who identifies himself with the body, and the body itself, the subtle body, which is our mind and our perspective on life, our personality, and the gross body, which is obviously changing. The way we can understand it is that in spite of all the changes of the body that the body goes through, the person who identifies themselves with the body is always the same person. And the second part of the philosophy is we're not this body, but we're also not the supreme in this universe, that there is another person who's above everyone. He's called God, and here he's called Krishna. Krishna has many names, Jehovah, Yahweh, and God is also called Krishna. So Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, and he's giving him the peace formula. Because as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Nashti buddhiyo yuktasya, nacha yuktasya bhavanaha, nacha bhavyantak shantira, ashantasya kutak sukham. Now for one who's not in divine or transcendental or Krishna consciousness can have neither a controlled mind nor steady intelligence, without which there is no possibility of peace, and how can there be any happiness without peace? In other words, until we become peaceful, we can't actually become happy. Although everyone wants to become happy, first we have to become peaceful. But as long as we misidentify ourselves with this body, then there is no possibility of being peaceful because the body is heading for destruction. And we never know what kind of problems are going to present themselves before us. All we know is that there will be problems. As there are problems now, there will be more problems in the future. One time, one great devotee was asked a question, what is the most amazing thing? And his reply was, Ahani, ahani, bhutani, gacchantiya, malayam, sheshasara, ischanti, kimasjari, matakparam. That in spite of the fact that we see so many living entities dying, we may not see them directly, but we hear of so many living entities meeting death at every moment, still the people remain behind. They believe that somehow or another they're going to live forever. That's because we are eternal, but the body we're in is only temporary. And despite the fact that the body is temporary, still we're trying to become satisfied within the body, in spite of all the anxiety we have to face, the fact that we have to leave the body. Just like I've given the example before, just like if we gave here everyone here a free ticket to fly to India for our next big festival, which will be in Gaur Purnim, how many of our guests here would take a free ticket to fly to India for Gaur Purnim? So luckily we have a very wealthy temple president, so if you see him, if you can find him after the class, I'm sure he'll give you at least one free ticket. So just imagine we're flying to India and we have the pilot making an announcement and he says, Hare Krishna, of course, because we're flying on Air Hare Krishna. And he says, Hare Krishna, welcome to Air Hare Krishna. We hope you enjoy the flight. We have a wonderful feast for you, 15 preparations, 5 subjis with curd, and halva, and samosas, and sweet rice, and gulab jamuns, and pizza, and ice cream. So we hope you enjoy the flight. We only have one other short announcement. It seems that the Hare Krishnas didn't have enough money to fill up the gas tank. And since we weren't aware of it when we took off, because we were too intoxicated by the prasadam they gave us, therefore, it seems, according to my co-pilot, we're going to crash into the Indian Ocean in around half an hour. And since we didn't bring along any life vests or anything, because we're not this body, therefore, sorry to tell you, we're all going to be killed in around a half an hour. But don't worry, because we have first-class servers on board, and they promised us that they're going to be able to serve the entire feast before we crash. And since this is unexpected, we're going to have to show the movie of the devotees in Vrindavan last year eating prasadam. But it's an hour-long movie, and you'll only be able to see half the movie. But we believe, we have faith, that if you pray to Krishna, if you really like the movie, he'll let you come back and see the other half. So we hope you enjoy the rest of the flight. The co-pilot and ourselves were bailing out. We won't be able to say goodbye to you. But we hope you enjoy it, and enjoy the feast. It was a great feast. We had most of it ourselves before we bailed out. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. So we can just imagine being on such an airplane, but we are on such an airplane. It's called the material body. We're on a flight somewhere, and sooner or later we're going to crash. And we don't know exactly where we're going to wind up. But in spite of that, we're thinking that somehow or another, in the meantime, before we crash, we can have a good time. we can somehow or another enjoy this world. That's because we're dedicated to this body. We're devotees by nature. And since we're not aware of the Supreme, the source of all beauty and wealth and strength and knowledge and fame and renunciation, because we're not aware of the ultimate object of devotion, we've taken this body as our object of devotion. And in any circumstance, we're more or less obliged to serve it. Just like we wake up in the morning and we look into the mirror and we ask the mirror, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the greatest of them all? And of course the mirror immediately responds, my dear fortunate soul, after passing through so many births and deaths, you finally met the absolute truth in the mirror. You're having darshan, direct perception. So now you should vow to render unalloyed, uninterrupted service to the deity you now find yourself face to face with. And if we're a little pious, and immediately we take a shower in the name of Abhishek, we dress the deity, we put ornaments on the deity, we perfume the deity, we offer all kinds of food to the deity. And then afterwards, when we're prepared, then we go out into the world to spread the glories of the deity all over the world. That's called Sankirtan. So we're in love with this body, just like originally we have love and affection for the Supreme. And in spite of whatever difficulty the body goes through, we're obliged or we're inclined to try to serve it and worship it. But the actual goal of life is not to serve this body, which ultimately has to meet destruction. The ultimate goal of life is to find out who actually is the Supreme and who should be the object of our love and service. Unfortunately, in the modern society, people are not educated in such matters. Instead, they think that by somehow or another acquiring more and more material things, then they'll become more and more happy. But actually, by acquiring more and more things, they become more and more disturbed. Because the reason why we misidentify ourselves with this gross and subtle material body is that just like in the material world, if you go to a store, and even if you don't see the proprietor, and even if you don't see the people who are taking care of the store, if you simply start putting into your bag all the things in the store and then walk out without paying, then the police come and arrest you. You may claim, well, I didn't see the proprietor, so why are you arresting me? But there is a proprietor. Similarly, we've come to this material world, and although we've gotten together and assured each other that there is no Supreme, there are no laws behind material nature, but the proof that there are laws behind material nature is that we've been arrested by the illusory energy and put into this false material concept of life. And although we may like our jail that we're in, we look into the mirror and say, what a beautiful jail. I haven't had a jail like this for many, many lifetimes. I love this jail. But we've been arrested by the illusory energy and put into this jail, and material nature is tormenting us in so many different ways, by old age, by disease, by death, and ultimately having to take birth again. And in the midst of these sufferings, we have these sufferings just caused by the body. Just like so many devotees here and our guests, we're leaning over because we can't sit straight. So our spine's hurting us. Maybe after listening to this class, our head will hurt us. We're suffering in so many different ways. Now we're going to have the feast. Before the feast, people are thinking, I'm hungry. I hope the class ends soon. And then after the class, I think, well, I was too hungry and ate too much. Now I wish the class would have lasted a little bit longer. So in this way, this body is causing you so many inconveniences. But in spite of that, in spite of the fact that we're taking God's property and we've decided that it's our property, despite of the fact that we've been arrested by the illusory energy and forced to misidentify ourselves with this property, still we're claiming that this world belongs to us and that we've divided it up and claim that we're this, you know, the proprietors of this world. And we pass laws, so many laws, and that way we think, well, God, He doesn't have a deed to any of this property. We have the deed, so if it comes before the judge, God comes before the judge, and He says He's the proprietor of everything, well, we can pull out our deed and prove that we're the proprietor. But that's not how it works. It's just like a group of thieves, they go and rob a bank. And after robbing the bank, the head thief stands up when they're in their hideout and raises his hands and says, "All glories to the thief. You did a great job. You're a powerful thieves. We love you. But now that we've stolen all this money, I have only one request to all of you. Please, please, let us divide this money up honestly." So they're all thieves. They spend their lives stealing things, but now amongst themselves, they want to be honest thieves. Similarly, in the world today, we've claimed that this land is my land, this land is your land, from the Texas border, it's going somewhere, it's all our land. But it's all stolen property. Not only we stole it from God, we stole it from the Indians, we stole it from everyone. We're trying to steal it from each other. And yet, we say, well, be honest when you're stealing things. But there's no question of honesty. The basic mentality is that of trying to steal from God and enjoy God's property. And if we're having a hard time, that's because the illusory energy of God is more powerful than we are. The Krishna consciousness movement is meant to, first of all, convince us there is a God, that we didn't come out of nothing. Everything didn't come out of nothing. Like some scientists say, that in the beginning there was nothing. And because it was, as I said this morning, it was just hanging around doing nothing, because that's what usually nothing does. It does nothing. Therefore, the mother of nothing, which nothing came from, kept on pushing him to do something. Why don't you make something out of yourself? So getting pushed by his mother for such a long time, it decided to become something. But because it was nothing, it couldn't become very much. So it just barely became a rock. And the mother of nothing, looked at the rock and said, "You know, you good for nothing." Couldn't become anything more than a rock. So at this point, nothing in the form of a rock became very disturbed and angry at its mother and exploded. And then flew everywhere trying to get away from its mother, which is nothing. And after wandering around the universe, or whatever it was, for so long, decided, its mother told him to settle down. So it settled down and became where we are now. And of course, it had to do something, so it began to evolve. So as the history goes, well, I guess if we look in our family book, in our, what do they call that? What's that? The family tree. So it's the history of our family. According to some scientists, then we should be able to see ourselves, you know, our whole family as it evolved. That there was grandfather, you know, so-and-so, he was a great general in the Indian Army or something, or in the American Army. He fought on the side of Custer, and that's why we have such a clean, that's why we like clean shaven heads. And And we go back and back, and then there was grandfather so-and-so. He was on the ship. He was the Mayflower. He was a stowaway. And then we go back and back. And finally, we see this one person in our family album, which is rather strange. He's just covered with hair, and he has a strange smile on his face. And they call him Uncle, you know, Grandfather Harry and Grandmother Lucy. And somehow or another, they seem there to be living in a tree somewhere. And we go back a little further, and we find this sheep. It's a black sheep, and we immediately recognize it as the black sheep in our family that everyone always talks about. And we trace the book back further and further, and we, strange enough, we get to something that looks like a mouse. It was Grandfather Squeaky, according to the little... And we go back, and to our surprise, there's a rock. Matter of fact, there's two rocks. And it says Grandmother Rock met Grandfather Rock, and they fell in love. And they produced Squeaky, the Grandfather Mouse, which later gave birth to the black sheep in our family, who produced a monkey who wound up swinging from our family tree. So, according to some scientists, this is the actual history of existence. From nothing, who got bored, he became a rock, and the rock cracked, finally, and exploded, and fell in love, met another rock and fell in love and produced Squeaky. Of course, this is not science, it's science fiction, but people like science fiction. Because the alternative is that there's actually a person behind the material universe, and it's not us. So that's unacceptable in a democracy because no one elected him. He must have fixed the vote. But the fact is that there is intelligence behind the universe. It didn't come about by accident, just like these bodies that we're in have not been created by any one of us. They've been created with intelligence. Even if we don't recognize who that intelligent person behind the universe is, we have to admit that there is an intelligent person who's created things beyond our conception. Just like if a scientist can create a machine, in one end you put grass and the other end comes milk, we'd certainly be impressed by that. But God has created such a machine. It's called the cow. Unfortunately, people are not impressed by that machine. Instead of giving the cow the Nobel Prize for chemistry, they put it into a slaughterhouse to kill it. Similarly, if a scientist could create a male and female machine, and when they get together, they make little machines and grow up, and make big machines, that later on make more machines, certainly it would be a great invention. But God has created such a machine. Or we could say, just like, for instance, as I gave the example the other day, if someone could create a male Rolls-Royce and a female Rolls-Royce, and when they got together, they made little Rolls-Royces, and when you gave them the next enough gasoline and oil, then they grew up and became big Rolls-Royces, everyone could have a Rolls-Royce. But the scientists can't do that. But God has done that in 8,400,000 species of life. It's called male and female. The problem is that people don't recognize God. They try to ignore him, although the fact is his energy has put us into a delusion. But at the same time, by his energy, the planets are staying in orbit. We're eating food. It's being digested. It's being assimilated. The unnecessary parts are being eliminated. So many amazing things are going on by the arrangements of supreme intelligence. So our real problem is not the value of the dollar or so many other so-called problems. Our real problem, besides old age, disease, and death, and the fact that we have to take birth again, our real problem is that we're not aware of that supreme person. Instead, we're trying to compete against him we're trying to usurp his position, and we're having a hard time doing it. Therefore, according to Bhagavad Gita, the real peace formula begins with recognizing who the actual proprietor of this universe is and what we're supposed to do with his energy in order to become released from our prison life-like existence of misidentifying ourselves with these bodies and mind and having to suffer the resultant experience of material existence. So here it explains in this peace formula to recognize God as the real friend of everyone who's trying to give us information how to come out of our problematic material existence by recognizing and utilizing the energies he's given us according to the mission or according to the way he desires. So of course in this age when things are very complicated, one alternative that we have is that Krishna will release us if we simply ask him to do it. And that's the meaning of the Hare Krishna mantra, where we're chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's a call to the Supreme Lord and his spiritual energy to kindly release us from the bonds of material ignorance and elevate us to our original platform, where we have a loving, conscious relationship with that Supreme Person. We become aware of him and realize that not only is he the source of all the control that we see in the material universe, but he's also the source of everything, including all beauty, all knowledge, all strength, and all loving relationships. So if we revive our relationship with Krishna, then we can become completely happy by finding out that he's such a wonderful person. And that can be done by following the scientific process that's given in Bhagavad Gita and by chanting Hare Krishna. So, thank you. Any questions?
Thank you so much for the wonderful and very entertaining class. Maharaj, my question is, in dealing with the material world, dealing with material energy, there is a saying that attachment and rejection or repulsion are different sides of the
aversion.
Same. I'm sorry?
Aversion.
Aversion, thank you. So attachment and aversion are different sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
So here we are, we're in the material world. Now, we're trying to understand that it's not, our actual identity, not our actual home. And we're developing a sense of detachment, if you will, aversion to it. At the same time, there's this attachment. So how are we supposed to deal with this situation correctly? You know, we're in this situation, how should we deal with it?
Well, if you walk in the street and you find $100 bill on the street, so a person who's not very honest will pick up the bill and put it in his pocket and walk away and hope no one notices. So he's a person who's very attached. Person who's not very, well, who's detached will look at the $100 bill and think, well, I better not touch it, I might get into trouble, and just walks away. A person who's more intelligent will see the $100 bill, pick it up, and bring it to the lost and found, and try and find out who the real owner is. So we're not either trying to pick up this material universe or the material energy here and try to utilize it for our enjoyment, nor are we trying to become detached from it and try to ignore it. Instead, we're trying to utilize it in the service of the Supreme Person, and therefore we don't have to worry about being attached or averse. We have to worry about what Krishna wants us to do with it. If we do that, then our relation with Krishna becomes perfect.
Thank you very much,
Sanjay.
Yes, sir.
I was just wondering if you could talk about love, because, I mean, it's very easy for me to cultivate a love for God, but it's difficult for me to cultivate love for other people who are cultivating love for God. Kind of puts me at odds with people when I'm in a spiritual community and at work and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, Prabhupada used to say, if you love me, then love my dog also. Just like maybe if you have a very wealthy person, and Krishna's quite wealthy, if you have a multi-billionaire, and you want to please him, what can you give him? Even you give, you know, you take out your new iPod and you say, well, here's my iPod. It winds up that he actually owns all the iPods. He's not impressed. But if his little child, you give him a 3-cent piece of candy, and he becomes happy, but you then automatically this wealthy man feels obliged to you. So Krishna's aim, he wants to please all his devotees. So we just try to please him directly, he's not so impressed. But if we please one of his servants, then he's very much impressed. Besides that, in our conception of life, we think things are separate from Krishna, but actually there's nothing separate from Krishna. We're looking at things, we think that there are either individual personalities and individual bodies, but we don't recognize that along with every body and the master controller, the proprietor of every body, is actually Krishna. Therefore, the most direct way of pleasing Krishna is to please his servants, because they're also acting on behalf of Krishna. Krishna is in their heart, and they're fulfilling Krishna's mission. So when we try to please them, then Krishna becomes very pleased.
You used a word earlier that was aversion. I feel like when I dedicate myself to my spiritual cause and my highest calling, which is all, you know, God consciousness, I feel, you used the word aversion, I feel an aversion to people that I'm associated with that are not aligned with that calling. And I feel like at the level of my intention, I feel like that's inappropriate and a bit pompous of me. And so it makes me question my dedication to God.
Well, in the beginning, a little aversion is not a bad thing. Better than too much attention. One time some devotees were distributing books and they were a little bit rude with one lady. So they wrote to Prabhupada complaining about how these devotees, who were supposed to be godly, were rude with people. Prabhupada said, well, it's unfortunate, you know, we're trying to train the devotees properly. But sometimes, you know, the devotees, when they begin the path of devotional service, the very things that they were very attached to previously, now they have to show a little bit of reversion to it, just to get over their attachment. So that may be some preliminary stage. Otherwise, if we don't manifest a little bit of detachment, then we may never overcome our attachment to these things.
But it feels like that's a lack of love. Like,
yeah, of course. Sense. Well, there's no lack of love. But we're just trying to cultivate love. But if we really want to cultivate things that we're either attached to or averse to, then we have to see them first in terms of their relation to Krishna. Because the actual worshipable object for everyone is Krishna. So if we see things as they are, or as they're related to Krishna, just like, for instance, an ordinary shoes on the street don't impress people very much. But if those shoes on the street belong to your little child, then because of their connection to your little child, and you feel some affection for them. So much so that people put them in bronze, and they put bronze around them, and they cherish them because they're their shoes and they're a little beloved child. So when we learn how to see things as related to Krishna, then everyone becomes dear, as Krishna becomes dear to us, then everyone becomes dear to us because they're related to Krishna.
So we should throw out emotions like sympathy and stuff like that and replace it with just seeing it as it is in relation to God.
Well, if you're actually in relation to God, then all the emotions will be there. What a matter. The devotee is sympathetic to people because they've forgotten God. Because they've forgotten God, therefore, out of sympathy, they go and tell people about Krishna. So all these things will be there.
Thank you.
So I think we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grandraj, Shrimad Bhagavad Gita, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.